Hi, and welcome everyone to the UBF audio download for the January 2008 luncheon event. It was entitled Online Viral Marketing and Public Relations in Web 2.0 Time. My name is Dan Perdon, and I'm sure I've interacted with most of you at one time or another, either as the guy who sends out all the emails, the guy at the reception table for UBF, or the guy to whom you come if you have a problem. This was a great, very well-attended event with a very relevant topic. It covered everything from site metrics to blogging to search engine optimization and many other things that are necessary to succeed on the web. This luncheon featured a panel of experts led by John Pilmer, including Paul Allen, George Wright, Dave Bascom, and Cindy Tetro, all of whom John will introduce further in the clip. There are no more capable hands than John Pilmer's to lead this discussion. He's the president and founder of Pilmer PR, he's a senior advisor for public relations and marketing communications, and he has more than 20 years of successful experience under his belt. Over those years, John has directed strategic marketing and PR initiatives for companies like AdvancedMD, Altiris, Novell, EmergeCore, Certiport, 10x Marketing, NextPage, and the list just goes on. All these things came together to make a really great luncheon presentation, and we hope you enjoy.
I thought it was pretty good. Because I'm the guy that's repeatedly forgotten to take back my Hollywood videos, so I end up paying like $12 per video that I watch at my home. So the $16 a month at Netflix seems to make some sense as a business model. But this morning they sent me an email, said they'd received my movie back, and they said, what do you think about it? So I did the really hard thing. I pressed on number 5-star because of the great movie. And rated the movie. And then up pops a list of suggested movies based on very few questions that they've asked me and my own buying behavior over the past 2 weeks. And I'm amazed at how accurate it is. They are suggesting stuff that I really like, and they're getting better and better by the day at suggesting or not suggesting things I don't like. That's the power of what we're moving into with the internet and with Web 2.0. In a recent article in the Associated Press, this phenomenon was focused on quite heavily. When the AP reported that based on the weather reports and restaurant listings you check out online, Yahoo has a good idea of where you live. Based on searches you've done, the web portal might also know where you want to go. Don't be surprised then to suddenly see an advertisement on flight deals between those two places. It's what United Airlines did with an ad on Yahoo earlier this year as people browse for something completely unrelated to travel. Elsewhere, online hangout Facebook is mining friends' buying habits, and major internet portals have brought companies to expand their reach and capabilities for behavioral targeting. Also, advertisers can try to hit you with what they believe you would like to buy. Even as doing so many amassing more data about you. This kind of goes into the topic for the day. In 1999, I sat in a meeting when I was working on Eric Schmidt, then CEO of Novell's PR team. And the VP of communications told the company marketing personnel to think web first. Well, in 10 years since then, the world has learned to think web first. At Pilmer PR, we tell our clients that the web has changed everything in public relations. Every major media outlet, both broadcast and print, has a serious online delivery system. Most have recognized the reader and listeners demand two-way conversation, with comment fields at the end of every story. The Boston Globe recently indicated their print edition of 1.2 million readers could likely be completely replaced within 5 years by their online edition which currently boasts 1.7 million readers. Press releases by savvy PR professionals must be written to maximize search engine optimization. Business Wire reports that press releases with two times more likely to be read if attached to with rich media content, meaning blogs, photos, videos. And this recently proved to be true when the phone rang. My phone rang, and Dow Jones was on the other end of the line. They had read an online version of a press release for a client of ours named 3DVO. They indicated they saw the press release and then clicked through to listen to the attached podcast by the new chairman of the board and the CEO. And this podcast convinced them that they wanted to write a story, which then followed on Dow Jones VentureWire online publication, which anyone in this room would likely want to be seen on. So this is a major movement afoot, and I think by today's attendance we see that we have demand to find out how you can best play in this new Web 2.0 environment. So we brought together a distinguished list of panelists today to join us, and as I call their name, I'd like them to come up and sit, starting closest to me over to the other side. And they will speak clearly into the microphone, even though we're sharing one at this very high-tech campus. Then we'll invite your questions at the end after we have some conversation about some of the trends of what's happening today. So with that, Cindy, would you come up? Cindy Tetro has more than 15 years of high-tech product management and marketing experience. She's currently the Vice President at NextPage over marketing, products, and support. Prior to joining NextPage, Sydney oversaw the Novell Directory Services product management group at Novell and remembers well the story of OneNet, which is still, I would say, Eric Schmidt's focus at Google as CEO. And she's also worked in IT at New Skin and as a tester at WordPerfect. Sydney was named in 2007, 2006, and 2005 Eastern Capital Top 100 Venture Entrepreneurs. We welcome Sydney Tetro. Dave Bascom is president and CEO of search engine optimization firm SEO.com. He's been helping website owners improve their search engine optimization rankings since 1998, including FilmerPR.com, which has seen a five-fold increase of web traffic since we started our blog, revamped our and SEO optimized our website 5 months ago. His roles have included director of marketing at Utah.com, VP of marketing at VMarketer, and president and founder of WebTargeted. In addition to helping businesses market their websites, Dave is constantly reading blogs and news about search engine marketing, and he maintains a search engine marketing blog at SEO.com. We welcome Dave Bascom. Probably well known to all of you, Paul Allen is a serial entrepreneur of some note and a CEO of World Vital Records currently. Paul has made substantial contributions to the field of genealogy. He co-founded Ancestry.com in 1997 and was his first CEO. As a CEO of World Vital Records, Allen has a goal to provide access to billions of high-quality records from all around the world to people who are doing genealogy and family history research. World Vital Records also recently launched FamilyLink.com, a free social network for genealogists and families. He's been an entrepreneur since 1990. He helped found InfoBases as well, and he blogs at paulallen.net, Paul Allen Gillespie. And we welcome Paul Allen. George Wright, Vice President of Marketing and Sales for Blendtec, has made a name for himself by a little campaign called Will It Blend. Has anyone heard of that? Very good. I certainly have. You know, the proven track record of delivering strategic thinking, brand awareness, literature, philosophy, and advertising strategy to local and international companies. These have been involved in several award-winning campaigns, and George recently introduced cutting-edge strategies in viral marketing called the Viral Marketing Sensation of the Year. And Willett Blend marketing campaign was delivered to tens of millions of viewers worldwide within the first 6 weeks. I believe he said to me today that 70 million people have viewed that campaign today. Harnessing the power of the internet for Blend Tech, and we welcome to our panel George Wright. So we'd like to take just a minute and get us perspective on where this whole Web 2.0, search engine optimization, social networking, behavioral marketing, where that whole animal is headed at internet speed. And I'll start with opening with Sydney, if she'd take a moment.
Yes. Okay, well, good afternoon. I'm happy to be here. And don't ask us to give some opening statements, like mine goes everywhere on something that could be interesting or helpful to the audience. But I was listening to everyone introduce themselves. The thing that kept coming back is everyone's dealing with the issue of being a small, most everyone in the room is dealing with a smaller company and small startup issues, and how you bring that company and how you do go-to-market strategy to introduce your product and gain a customer base. And those are really, really hard problems to solve, of which in traditional roles also took a lot of money. And one of the things I think is great about what is happening in the industry is that the advantage to take and reach a lot of individuals becomes much easier. So think 30 years ago, right? It used to be the only way I sell my product or you heard about a product is, you know, either is probably someone told a friend and then they only have so much reach, right? They can only tell 5 other friends. In today's world, George can be at 70 million views over the course of 12 months because of the explosion of your ability to contact people and for people to be able to express themselves. In a recent study, it was said that over 50% of consumers or people who could have purchasing power, actually I think it was between the ages of 13 and 30, 50% of those people produce online content. So you have a lot of people who are on the web, and then the other interesting stat is 70% of all people research the web to find before they purchase a product. But 86% of those people don't believe the product's own website. So they're doing mass amounts of searching of online content that is getting produced by various means. And whether you acknowledge it or not, that content is getting out there. So the trick is, how do you become part of this whole community of conversation that's happening out there and allow your message to come through, the authenticity of who you are, and create a conversation about what you're doing? And I think that's a really, really, you know, hard task. There's only one Willett Blend of all the lots of campaigns that you could try, but what you have to start to understand is what's the market you're going after, what's the objective, what are you trying to accomplish? Because a lot of the times the campaigns that I run, our objective doesn't necessarily reach millions of users, but it has been, in some cases, to become a thought leader for a specific purpose. So, you know, we've done specific things where we've gone to events that are in our industry and said, we're going to use podcasting as a way to become the thought leader of this event, and we're going to create content that's pervasive outside of just the event and do it in a low-cost manner because, you know, events, when we started doing it, I hadn't quite picked that up. And now all of a sudden we have 20 podcasts from industry luminaries with our brand on them that are getting distributed through all sorts of media. That's really, really powerful to create a conversation when I don't have a huge budget as a startup company to spend on those types of things. And so I really believe it's all about creating that conversation. I'm just going to leave you with an example of how fast the word can spread on the internet and why it becomes so important to get in touch with the people that are covering your market, what the blogosphere is saying, what industry influencers are or are not talking about inside of your market. So I don't know if you know who Robert Scoble is, but he became famous by being the blogger at Microsoft and basically the videographer. And then he left for PodTech about a year and a half ago. The first part of December, he was over in Paris, and he was on stage giving a presentation at a show. And so just so you know, if Scoble writes about you, people will claim that their website will get 50,000 plus hits back if he mentions you. So he has immense power. There's actually a subway map of San Francisco, the most influential people in the community, and Scovel, along with Mike Arrington, are the two people that he wants to be talking about you. So if Scovel or Arrington mentions you, right, you get accelerated, especially in the technology community. So Scovel's on stage, Mike Arrington's in the audience. Scovel's giving a speech about Web 2.0, social media, etc. And Mike Arrington's on the front row of the computer. He posts a story that Scovel's leading PodTech while Scovel's on stage. Someone in the audience sends a text message to Scovel, who gets it. And the text message says, go see the front page of TechCrunch right now. He pulls up the screen of TechCrunch, and the story says, Scovel's leading PodTech, and he had no idea that story was getting posted at that moment. That's in a matter of 5 minutes. Of how fast that information can travel. And then within a matter of 30 minutes, that news is everywhere, right? I'm back here in the United States, he's in Paris, and you're hearing the explosion of this story, and then you've got CNBC picking up, you've got rumors about where he's going. So your ability to get integrated into that and figure out how to become part of the community is really, really important to your new marketing strategies as you think about those and where you invest.
Dave Mascom. You know, as I listen to everybody's introductions, you know, we've got kind of a wide range of industries and reasons for coming to ask. A lot of people are looking for, you know, growing a business, and most of us, I think, are here for that, for the business or the organization. And, you know, a lot of times people, when they talk about new media, they talk about Web 2.0, they talk about these things, it's kind of all about the technology. And the technology does change. There's you need to understand how the technology works, how to use the technology. But really, the point I just want to kind of make in my intro is that it's really not about the technology, it's about the people, it's about connecting with people. And that's, you know, the technology has changed and will continue to change over time, and the techniques and tactics that you use, but it's about getting the right message in front of people. And things have really flip-flopped in terms of the way it used to be. It used to be, you know, as a marketer, you would go out and you'd buy billboards, you'd buy TV ads, you'd buy radio ads, you'd blast the world and push your message out and say, this is who we are, come buy our Kleenex or whatever. Now, the model is reversed, where the consumers are telling us what they want. They're talking, they're able to communicate, like Sydney said, they're able to communicate across the world with friends that they never would have known otherwise. And find out, you know, the real deal on your company and the service or product you provide. And so you've got to be aware of that. And it's something where you've got to be. There are things that you can do to basically present yourself in the best possible light. And it's important you back that up with the quality product and the quality company, because you can't. It's not as easy to fake it. You've got to really be, back up what you say with what you actually provide. And, it's a matter of getting things in front of people at the moment that they provide. And that's what you can do. That's the promise and really the realization of e-commerce is when someone's at the precise moment, someone's looking for your product or service, you can deliver that and actually get the sale. And so that's what it's about. And the things we can talk about are some of the ways that we've done that.
Paul Allen. So the thing that I'm most excited about right now is social networking and how available, how accessible that is to all of our businesses to reach huge numbers of people with very little effort relative to 30 years ago or even 5 or 10 years ago. So in 1996, when we started Ancestry, Ancestry became the largest genealogy company in the world, mainly because we asked them to contribute their content to a large database, and our most popular database was user-submitted. And our message boards and all the user-generated content really led to the traffic growth. And then we launched a social network for families, which we didn't call a social network, but it really was a social network for families back in 1998, and it got 1 million users in 140 days. So that was an exciting growth story until the social network turned into a paid service. So in 2001, after the bubble burst, and investors were worried, and you got to get the profitability. So the first thing that went was the free social network for families, which had been growing by 20 to 30,000 new users a day, but now stopped growing for the next 5 to 6 years had negative growth, no development work. So the social network aspect of MyFamily.com, or now the Generations Network, was really overlooked. So I left the company in 2002, kind of unhappy about losing that opportunity to provide free websites for every family in the world, because the company was focused on genealogy, which was a very profitable business. So when we started World Vital Records as a genealogy company again, the thing that I got most excited about was starting a new social network for genealogists. So we launched a site called Family Link back in April, started getting a few hundred new users a day. We were tracking on Wikipedia, you can go and see the largest list of all the top social networks in the world. There are over 26 social networks that have over 10 million users. And a lot of them are niche ones that you'll never hear about. But, you know, you've heard of MySpace, you've heard of Facebook, you've heard of Orkut from Google, you've maybe heard of Bebo or Hi5. But there are so many. There's one in Japan that has 10 million users. There's one in Sweden that has several million. So it's crazy how fast these social networks grow. And we thought, well, let's do one for genealogists, and then let's invite all the family members of all the genealogists to come as well. And then Facebook changed the world in May when they announced Facebook Platform. What they said was, we're not a social network that's a destination site anymore that we're going to kind of control. We're going to open up the social network for any software developer in the world to launch an application into our world. And it will spread virally just like our applications have. And so I came away from that Facebook Platform launch event just with a completely new idea for our company. Rather than have a destination social network, why not just build applications for families in Facebook? So we launched in October an application, a family tree building tool called We're Related, and we got a million users in 29 days. It took MyFamily.com 140 days to get a million users. So, and this costs us very little to develop, almost nothing to promote. We're over 2 million users now. We're planning to launch 10 to 20 more Facebook apps this year. Google, MySpace, LinkedIn, Ning, Hi5 have all teamed up to counteract what Facebook did with their platform. And they've now all agreed to create this group called Open Social, which means that all the social networks are going to open up to third-party developers. And Yahoo on Monday at CES announced that they're going to open up their website, their mobile platform. All the major media, all major portals and social networks have to be open to compete with Facebook, which has 200,000 developers working on apps for it. Facebook's becoming an operating system for the Internet, and just like Microsoft became an operating system with Windows with all the application developers. So it's a huge opportunity for anyone to come up with a clever way to reach those users of social networks. Please raise your hand if you actively use Facebook. Okay, so about 10 of you out of 70 maybe. So I won't ask you about MySpace, but LinkedIn. Raise your hand if you use LinkedIn. Okay, so almost all of you use LinkedIn. LinkedIn is opening up too. So if you're a business and you want to reach, you know, any kind of business professional with an application in LinkedIn, that's coming. So it's really an unprecedented opportunity for reaching millions of people at a low cost.
George, right?
In my office on the wall, I've got a little statement. I picked it up from a little article in Business Week that talked about Will and Blend, and it says at the top, advertising is the tax companies pay for unremarkable thinking. You think about that. Let me just for a second kind of frame the economy that we're living in today, guys. We live in a permission-based society now. It used to be that there were two or three networks that did all of your broadcast television. It used to be that there were just a few newspapers, and there were just a few things where you could go and advertise and put out your message and put out your word. All of that advertising is what I like to call interrupt advertising, and there have been books written about this. We live in a permission-based society. How many of you guys TiVo the news and skip through the commercials? That's the society we're living in, guys. People skip over messaging that they do not want to see. So unless I give someone my permission to market to me, I don't see their message anymore. And that's where it comes down to, is we need to find ways to hit the niches of our products. We need to find the right people. We need to find a way that we can market to the people who actually buy our services and our products. And again, I go back to where I started. Advertising is the tax companies pay for unremarkable thinking. Now, let's complicate that a little bit more, because now there's just not three networks. How many cable stations have you got? Where do people go? There's not a centralized location. So you need to be creative. You need to use permission-based networks. And what some people are terming Web 2.0 and new media is not new media, guys. It is the new world. It's something that we're all going to have to deal with regardless of our business.
Very good. Thank you very much. We're going to ask some questions of our panelists and then open it up to your questions as well. We'll start with you, Sydney, if we could. Help us understand what word-of-mouth marketing is, how it relates to the Internet, and where it's going for corporate strategies.
Okay, so just a couple of interesting tidbits. About 3 years ago, I was sitting at a conference, and an organization started called the Word-of-Mouth Marketing Association. It's based in New York City. And the guys who were the co-founders were sitting in the room with me, and it's interesting, I was reading last night some of their literature, you know, that in 3 years, they're now to tens of thousands of members inside of that, and a huge community of people following. And actually, as a resource, if you go to WAMA.org, they actually have a lot of really valuable insight into and case studies around people who have tried all sorts of programs for market. Because word-of-mouth marketing isn't just, the simplistic form of, just passing along. There's actually lots and lots of different disciplines inside of that, because they can be everything from, it can be brand programs, they can be customer loyalty, they can be thought leadership. There's just so many different ways that word-of-mouth marketing can take effect. But ultimately, what the impact is and what you have to figure out is how to listen to the conversation about what's happening in your organization. I was reading a blog just the other day about kind of 26 tools that you can actually, there's a whole bunch, but there's a lot of tools that you can go on the Internet and figure out what people are talking about inside your market, and if they're talking about you and what they're saying, whether positive or negative. The guys who started WAMA, it's just an interesting story. It's actually, now it was purchased by Nelson at Ratings. It used to be called BuzzMetrics. And one of the reasons they were getting hired was by big automotive companies and big consumer product good companies to go research what's going on in the market. And what they started to find, I remember back when everyone's on the protein diet, right? So, and all diets have it bad, right, we watch it. And so what they start, and the consumer product good companies react. Oh, everyone wants the Atkins diet, therefore we must deliver Atkins food. Right, but their product development cycle happens to lag. It's like 9 to 12 months, right? So it's the fad, develop product, deliver to shelves. What they started finding when they watched conversations in the blogosphere, which means whether you're searching in like Google's blog search, whether you're going to a Blogspot, a Technobrotty, you're watching conversations that are happening in the market. They started to find that at the time those products hit for the Atkins diet, everyone had moved on to the next diet fad in the conversation. And if you noticed, if you recall, every Atkins product that was on the market was pulled within like 60 days, because the conversation completely moved. And the car company caught the same issue, which is they're trying to figure out what are the new innovations, what are the things that they can react to in a timely fashion. And that's the key to figuring out what campaigns work for you. What are conversations that you can either create or leverage inside of your campaigns and create very specific things that can leverage those types of communities. So for me, in my day job with NextPage, we care about enterprise software sales. It's a really exciting business. But it's a very long sales cycle. So I'm not going to sell someone a product by having them look at a viral marketing campaign or a podcast. But what I do have to do is create thought leadership with them. I'm a small startup company competing against companies who have billion-dollar market cap. So how do I create thought leadership in the compliance and security space around our product? One of the ways we've done that is with podcasts and then the spread of those podcasts through other mediums. So we'll show up, like I mentioned earlier, we'll show up and we'll record, and we wanted industry thought leadership. That was my objective. So we have people actually come to our booth at the show, CEOs of big companies like Iron Mountain and EMC. They sat in our booth. We recorded podcasts with them, and then we syndicated that out to millions of listeners. And the Arno side even sent that out. So over the course of the next 3 days, they had an additional 5,000 people who hadn't attended the show actually listened to that. And you think of the context of the numbers I care about, which are global 2,000 companies, those start to become influential numbers that I actually care about, and then people continue the conversation. We did an executive summit in New York City in December, and all of those people came because of conversations that people had by sharing information inside of the space and the thought leadership that we started creating by campaigns that were low cost. And those become a really, really important part of that conversation, and they're part of the word of mouth. Just as another interesting example, I have a company called Rocky Mountain Voices where we actually produce video and podcasts and syndicate to Silicon Valley. And Microsoft came to us and asked to create a channel that they can distribute and create conversations outside of traditional Microsoft channels. Microsoft has a huge presence, right? But everything Microsoft produces feels like Microsoft stamp, and people don't listen. So they wanted another media that they could go and interview their case studies, have conversations around loss, around silver light, around things like that, and then syndicate it and create conversations outside of their normal portal. That's what you have to start doing. You have to start thinking about ways that you can be true, authentic, and deliver meaningful content that's not marketing, that doesn't feel like marketing fluff, that doesn't feel like fun content, but that feels real to those people that you need to actually talk to.
Thank you. This next question is for Dave Baskin. Dave, your company does search engine optimization. Could you help define that for the crowd and specifically talk to the issue of how to get your website ranked highly in search engines? Can you
That? Search engine optimization. I hope everybody's heard the term, maybe not, but it's everybody's kind of tossing around the term. When it comes to showing up and getting your site shown up in search engines, there's basically two ways to do that. You buy your way to the top, you pay for the sponsored listings, the advertisers show up on the side at the top, or you can show up in the organic or the natural listing, the free listing. And most of the time when people talk about search engine optimization, they're talking about the organic listing. And so search engine optimization, I guess a basic definition would be the process of manipulating and adjusting your website so that it shows up higher in the search rankings where you're selecting keywords. The actual In practice, there's a lot of steps that go into that. You need to make sure you're selecting the right keywords and targeting the keywords that are going to generate sales and tracking the effectiveness of that so you see which keywords actually are generating leads or sales, whatever your metrics are, and tracking that through the process. But there's, in terms of what it takes to show up high in search engines, we can talk for hours, and I do it every day, so I'm happy to talk to that later on. But there's kind of two components that really to focus on. Number one is having content that's relevant to the keywords you want to show up for. If you've got the best site, you've got the best content, that makes it a lot easier to get not only to show up in the search engine, but for that ranking to stick. Because if you have a junky site and you get it to show up, you can trick the search engines for a little while, but Google's constantly trying to improve, trying to get better in that point of the best sites. So if you don't have the best site, eventually you can get booted for a site that has better content. That's typically the way it goes. So that's the number one thing, is get, write quality content, have it written, build a site that deserves to be ranked number one for your keywords. And then the second thing is to get links from other websites, other bloggers and news organizations and other websites are linking to your site. That indicates that basically a signal to the search engine that your site is worthy of attention and it's worth showing up. And so those are things that you need to focus on. Those are at least kind of some of the big keys.
And to add to that, I think it's also important to make sure that any content you put on the internet is linking or that it helps create link backs to your website, right? So any place you publish information, whether it's a press release, a white paper, case study, byline article, make it as linky as possible, and and get it to drive traffic back to your website. Paul, you have a thought?
I just have to add something, because I've never met Dave till today, but a few years ago I gained a lot of respect for him, because he's been a blogger, and I remember one blog post. I was running 10X Marketing for a while, and that was a search engine optimization internet marketing company. And I remember one of his blog posts, he listed the names of all of his competitors in Utah Valley that were doing search engine optimization, and he had links to them and all this stuff. And I thought, you know, and he obviously, you know, pitched his own services, but he listed, put the words of all the competitors, links to all their sites. He could have done some SEO, and probably did, so that if anyone was searching for 10X Marketing, the first hit was probably going to be our website. The second hit was going to be his blog. Okay, so with all of his competitors, he now had keywords on all on his blog that could attract anyone searching for any of those competitors could find his site. And I gained a lot of respect for him. I thought, you know, this guy really knows what he's doing.
Very good. Well, that leads to the next question, which is for you, Paul Allen. Help us understand, if you can, a little bit about how email marketing has helped you to drive traffic and awareness.
So, you know, early on in 96 on, we at Ancestry, we really tried everything. Every time we read a case study in the national press about somebody trying something, whether it's, you know, affiliate marketing. Amazon did affiliate marketing, so we did affiliate marketing. It became our biggest source of customers. We have 30,000 affiliates driving about 30 to 35% of our subscribers. Email marketing, permission-based email marketing, where you build your own house list of people. You try to give value away to people in order to get them to subscribe to something that's going to be valuable. And so at World Vital Records, our email list is about 140,000. Every time we send out an email with, you know, special offers, we generate a lot of revenue that way. But the most interesting thing we've done the last 6 months with email is we've gone to literally about 24 other companies in the genealogy industry, and we've said, hey, do you want to cross-promote? We've got this list. We're willing to tell them about your products. You've got your list. Can you tell them about our products? And we've come up with really special offers for our partners so that they can email their lists and say, hey, you want a special deal on World Vital Records subscriptions? You know, we've even done as much as 2 years for the price of one to their readers only. And that has actually, in some months, generated 50% of our sales. So I learned this about 10 or 12 years ago, listening to some internet marketing or some guerrilla marketing tapes. But cross-promotion, not necessarily with your direct head-on competitors, but anybody in your space that has an email list, and you've got an email list, I mean, you can do this all day long. You can do this multiple times. And you both benefit, but if you do the most partnerships, you end up benefiting more than anyone else. You end up getting customers from all of the other players in your space. So that's the most important thing we've done in the last 6 months with email is cross-promote.
Excellent. Good information. Let's jump to a little bit different topic here. George, 70 million viewers of the Will It Plan campaign. I would suspect that you have a handle on viral marketing to some degree, and everyone here would like to hear what you're thinking about. What are the secrets to a successful viral marketing campaign?
First of all, viral marketing, is it something that everybody can do? Absolutely yes. No questions asked. We found ourselves in a little bit of a firestorm, which has been just a total kick in the pants for us. We started with a brand, we started with the basic business 101, and decided we wanted to take viral marketing out there. There are people who will write books about Web 2.0, about all kinds of fancy marketing things, and as far as I'm concerned, it's very simple. If I find something that is fun, engaging, interesting, or something that I'm willing to pass along to my friends, That's exactly what viral marketing targets is the second along, is the pass along. If I talk about my company as a company owner or as an executive of the company, you're going to assign a certain amount of value to it. If your friends talk to you about a company, you're going to assign a different level of value to it. Pass along viral marketing is just a critical component. Will It Plan started out as an idea of a viral marketing campaign. As I went back, as I was thinking about this conference, I went back and looked at my initial the initial paperwork when I put the idea down on paper and we suggested what we were going to do, the initial launch, and how we thought through the process. It was nailed 100% right on test. Was where it went. It maybe went accelerated much faster than I'd expected, but other than that, it was about right on target. But let me just give you a couple of tips. If you're looking at something that you want to put out there, number one, first of all, how much value do I put in being on the front page of YouTube? Not a lot. That gets you some press, gets you some publicity, it's fun, it's engaging. But most of those people that are watching your video probably won't have a shot at your products or services. So you're in a whole new branding hype. You're not selling products at that time, you're selling a brand. And so you got to be careful of what you're doing. If I put out a video and it hits people who will actually buy my product, that's a successful viral campaign. It might not be on the front page of YouTube. It might not get talked about in the Wall Street Journal, but that's a successful campaign. And so the scope, the excitement that comes around with the runaway success is not really the success of viral marketing. Viral marketing success is getting in the right niche, getting your message in front of the customer at the right time. Everybody's talked about that. It's right on task. Some of the secrets that I've found with a viral marketing campaign, if you want something for people to watch, it has to be engaging. I wouldn't make it too long. Keep it a little bit short, minute and a half viral video. Unless you're deep into content, you'll lose people very quickly. Number two, it needs to explain what you're trying to do in a unique and creative way. And I would say most importantly, be honest about what you do. Keep in mind the barrier to entry to putting out a viral video is very low. You need a web camera and a computer terminal and a high-speed connection. That's about it. The barrier to entry is low to play in that. Also, the barrier to entry is low for your competitors to come out and hit you. If you're not honest, if you're not saying the right things, you will be flogged in a very public forum in a very hurtful, painful way. So, be honest. Use your integrity. Do it right. And you know what, guys? Have a little bit of fun. You know what? At the end of the day, people want to do business with people that they have fun. You know, how many times... Very brief example. My daughter went in for a little bit of surgery on her hand the other day. I knew before we selected this surgeon that he was the best. I knew that already. We get in and we sit down, and she's very nervous. And he sits down, and his bedside manner was impeccable. It was perfect. And because he sat down and talked to her on her level, I had no questions about his capabilities. But I certainly had a lot more respect for him as an individual, and his trust level went way up. He was somebody that I wanted to work with, somebody that I trusted. And so I would just recommend to have some fun, understand who you're talking to, speak at their level, and be engaging. It's a kick in the pants when it all comes together.
Thank you very much. I noticed that while he was commenting there that Paul Allen was busy blogging, apparently, and potentially has already launched another company based on George's ideas. So be watching for Paul Allen and Lesser.
I just want to know if you've blended Coke and Mentos yet.
We got a call from E.B. Bird. They're the guys that do the Coke and Mentos stuff. And we've actually tried a lot of different things. Mythbusters did a thing on Coke and Mentos. Yes, we have. We haven't posted the video because we can't get it to shoot higher than 30 feet in the air like Mythbusters did. And it's not gonna, you're not going to take the world by storm. And, you know, just wait until you can. So we've tried several things that will probably never see the light of day. But we've tried some things that have been pretty awesome, too. No, E.B. Bird, they're great. Coke and Mentos. We have blended Coke and chicken. We made Coke chicken. Yeah. It was a lot better than the noise I was in the whole show.
Well, we'd like to open up the floor to you for a couple of questions. If you could state your question loud and clearly, we'll repeat it for the benefit of our podcast and ask our speakers up here to raise their hand if they have a thought about that. I saw our first question here. I'll repeat your question. Go ahead.
Or I could speak it either way. Again, I'm Lee with the advertising agency. My consulting background goes into Asia as well. And many, many years I've been responsible for bringing new content, new content, new mediums, let's put it that way. For example, in 1984, I helped put up the first satellite for Europe. In more recent times, I've helped put on television onto devices and movie content and things like that. My question for the panel is basically, I've noticed a trend recently, which is that most consumers want things for free. And obviously that's a perplexing thing if you're a movie producer or a television producer. The end product might be many, many millions of people, but if everybody wants it for free, is that a trend that we can somehow override with a lot of the considerations that we're doing up here? Sorry for my back.
So how to override the demand for free stuff over the internet using it?
Paul actually touched on it when he mentioned that the population of a certain website that he launched was this much, and then when he put a price tag on it, it shrank and kept having negative growth. How do you address that is my question.
Pretty much you change your business model. If everything has to be free in order to maximize the exposure, then you find advertising ways to monetize it or other e-commerce or services or something. The Wall Street Journal is probably going to go free online. And one analyst indicated that they would have to have a fourfold increase in traffic in order to have enough advertising revenue. And then another analyst came out and said, no, he made some mistakes. It's 12 times more traffic that they would have to have in order to generate enough revenue to offset the loss of their subscriptions. But there is definitely downward pressure on content on the internet, on pricing of content on the internet. You think of what the LDS Church is doing in genealogy, putting billions of records online for free. That's going to make it harder and harder for subscription genealogy companies to charge the same price. Google is scanning all the books in the world, as is Microsoft. Same thing. But I think I just think you have to adapt. You can't force consumers to not, want free content.
And that's the consumer angle. Of course, the B2B angle. Look at Advanced MD, software as a service, and Draper was in the Inc. 500 top fastest growing companies in the United States this last year for offering software as a service over the internet. A B2B play, they're certainly not giving it away. So there's definitely a way around that. Other comments on this?
I just wanted to say, I've been working with Google. They contacted us a little while ago, said we'd love to do a white paper on a case study on your experience. And as I talked with them and I got further into it, what they're really trying to do is find a way to generate revenue on YouTube. Okay, the more you give things away for free, the less opportunity you have to generate revenue, to make money. And guys, that's why we're all in business. Google's struggling with that very concept. There are websites out there that generate revenue. Right now, YouTube is not one. They're doing some experimentation, some other things that are going to try to do that, try to generate revenue, and try to attract, it's going to be business. This is where the advertising revenue is going to come from. Everybody wants to find a way to turn something into revenue. Everybody as a consumer wants to find a way to turn something that used to cost them into something for free. It's an age-old battle, something that we're all going to fight. The people who are going to win are the smart ones. The smart ones are going to end up with money, and the ones that aren't are going to end up paying it. And that's just the way it goes. By the way, you'll see some things from YouTube here shortly where they're going to try to embed some advertising and some other things to try to do exactly that to generate revenue. Google's not. They understand there's a huge value in the database, but they need to find a way for that to ring the till.
Okay, next question over here.
What tools do you recommend to analyze the best keywords for a particular endeavor?
What tools to analyze keywords? I think that's probably a question for Dave.
I'll start. I'll tell you the tools that we use. We're actually, there are a lot of tools out there. The truth is most of those aren't that great, or they're not really comprehensive in terms of giving you all the information about us or giving you search done. But there's several different tools that we use to basically pull together our keyword data. We have some internal tools that we use. But two tools that are available for free on the web that we use that I would recommend. And there's some that are paid. There's free, basically I'll give you kind of some of the free ones and mention some paid ones as well. Google has a lot of free tools actually. They actually open up a little bit more recently about with their search data, but they won't tell you exactly how many people search on a keyword. they have a couple different keyword estimating tools and keyword suggestion tools that are very good. If you go search, I don't know the exact URL, it's kind of long, but if you go to Google search on keyword tools, or Google keyword tools, you can pull up the first two links of those two tools. MSN actually just, or Microsoft just released a very good keyword tool actually that's integrated with Excel. It's a pretty slick tool, it's got a lot of functionality. We just started evaluating things. I really like it so far. So it's called the MSN keyword tool, I'm not sure. I think they have a name for it, but I don't know. So those two were good. The keyword, we used to use Overture, the Overture tool. You may be familiar with that, but it doesn't work most of the time, and if it does, it's more like a year, 12-month-old data. But there's a couple other tools that are similar. There's a free version of Word Tracker, wordtracker.com, and Keyword Discovery, both good free tools. There's actually, they have, both of those have paid versions as well. And if you're really getting into it, are worthwhile, but the free versions can give you a lot of good information to get started.
Okay, let's go to another question for Kit.
It seems like the getting our message out will eventually become a commodity, and it won't take a lot of skill and talent to get on the engine and get it to search at the top and all this. Eventually, people that want a certain thing will be able to say, I want this, and whoever has the most innovative product or solution is the one that's going to win. Do you see that happening, or is it always going to be a barrier between actually having a cool product and getting it to the right customer?
So if I'm understanding correctly, you're concerned with seeing that the value is going to decrease over time and that everyone will be able to do the job of marketing and PR?
Yeah.
I hope not.
Some people have a job.
Go ahead, see it, have at it.
So definitely the barrier to getting your message out is lower. It doesn't take the same type of ad budget, but you still have a unique, compelling message with a strong value proposition that has to be articulated in some form. Because by themselves, consumers don't create that for you. They have to be able to find your product. They have to know what your product does, why it's different, and why they should buy. And that doesn't fundamentally change. And someone has to come up with that and be able to deliver that. Because even the age-old problem of great products with bad marketing, they didn't ever get purchased or go very far. That will still be the case. You still have to be able to not only have that great product, just the barriers and the tactics are changing, and they'll continue to change. But, I mean, I would say getting to the top rankings in SEO, it's not necessarily a no-brainer task, right? I have 75 terms that we index on, and only, I think, 40% of those am I in the first page. And some of those take month upon month. Actually, I'm sure even in Dave's work, right, they'll estimate how long it takes you to get to the top of that. But it means you have to have great keywords, high relevance to your site, links to your site. It's not really a no-brainer game to get your message out there. You just have to be able to have a smart message crafted well, positioned well, and find your market. And that still takes people to be able to enable Enlist to help you do that.
I'll add to that, 15 or 20 years ago, you may have done a press release and it was sent to the press. It was probably faxed to the press, right? It's now emailed to the press. Don't call me usually if they're a big publication. Plus, the fact is that not only is the press a target, but potential investors are a target, potential partners are a target, the customer, the prospect is a target of that same document. So you can no longer just deliver the news in the stale form that the press wants to get, but you have to also deliver it as a published document that has value on the internet to hold different audiences. So that skill is a moving target that causes professionals in marketing and PR to have to think more strategically and stay ahead of the curve on the quality of being delivered. And it's also where a sharp CEO comes in, be able to deliver the strategic vision of where it's going and understanding where it's headed, so in the communications quality, so that you rise above the fray. Any other thoughts on this?
Just two thoughts. I heard Seth Godin use this concept that advertising is a tax on those that aren't doing unremarkable thinking. Seth Godin talks about making your product remarkable. I heard him speak at an advertising agency conference in New York. And he said, basically, you're all going out of business unless you go upstream to work with the engineers the advertising agencies should go up and consult with the engineers to teach them how to build a remarkable product that will have word of mouth and kind of delightful experience built right into it. So I think the time used to be where you had a great product but you couldn't get the message out. I think that's changing. By 2012, they're estimating that 1.2 billion internet users will be on social networks. Social networks is a great place for people to recommend movies or music or products of any kind. And I think the word of mouth viral marketing stuff is going to be so powerful that you're kind of right that if you have a great product, it will spread more easily than it ever has before. If you have a lousy product, knowledge of that will spread too, and you're going to have a really hard time selling. Because it's like the presidential candidates who think if you just spend hundreds of millions of dollars on interruption advertising, and you get this whole new generation of people on the internet, they're not paying any attention to that. If Ron Paul and Barack Obama have captured the internet generation, the Facebook and MySpace polls are showing them winning, in both, just because they're appealing to the young and they kind of get that. Barack Obama launched a Facebook app in May. He was the first political candidate to launch a Facebook app, and now he's out polling everyone else in Facebook.
Very good. Let's take one more question back here. So
I work for a global company, but my own experience is very local. If I'm putting resources into a conversation with somebody outside a 50-mile radius of where I live, I'm wasting those resources. Now, am I looking at that wrong? Is there a way I can make what you're talking about relevant to my business, or do I need to change my model to fit what you're doing, and how do I do that?
So if I'm Shannon, why is it relevant to you if you're local?
Or how do I make it relevant? If
you're local, how do you make it relevant? So that's the question.
Yeah, that's actually a common question because a lot of businesses are locally focused and you've got to localize. It really depends on, there's a lot of ways to use and gain value from social networks. We talked about social networking in terms of beyond just finding more local customers. Find resources to grow your business in other ways and things like that. But in terms of just marketing and reaching local customers are online too. I mean, obviously, there's millions of people on the social networks and on searching the web, using email, and a percentage of those, pretty evenly distributed. In fact, probably a higher percentage here than in some areas are online. And so basically, what you're trying to do is make contact with that segment, the local segment. But really, and without understanding what your business is, there may be.
Can I direct that to Cindy, though, too?
Yeah.
I think the content you're talking about is really fun and really exciting. If I understand the email part and the local network through a LinkedIn or whatever, but what about the broad channel?
So I'll tell you one thing that came to mind is one thing that we're currently doing that I would consider very local. So I don't know, most of you are familiar with Connect Magazine, right? So it's one of the magazines here. So Colin Kelly and I, we actually produce, I had a baby 3 months ago, so a bit was lacking. But we actually try to produce a weekly Connect Cast. And what we do is we take whatever the top stories are from that week, and we actually do a podcast with them. So he and I get on Skype, usually today on Thursday, and we record a usually 5 to 10 minute podcast where we talk about whatever the top issues are. So we did one right before Christmas that included the UTC Hall of Fame. It included the Women Tech Council. We did a big charity event at the Women Tech Council. And John Hudson Sr. putting money into Utah State University. And we've done a whole bunch of those, but it's very regional, right? That it's all about what's happening in the Utah technology health industry. And so, but on average, we get about 3,000 listens, 3,000 to 5,000 listens a month, depending on how interesting our topics are, what the trends are. We syndicate that to a broader market just because we want information sake, so it does get into Silicon Valley where people will find out trends in Utah. But it's very, very localized. It's created a lot of great awareness for Connect Magazine and very real-time conversation. So we get comments all the time back. People will follow the Connect Cast and what's going on. So I think it's a pretty compelling example of regional content that gets distributed on the web. And then, when Colin sends out his weekly Connect or his daily Connect emails, it's the top story in there. People can listen to it. They can subscribe to the RSS feed. And it's hitting that niche market of what we're trying to get, this core, the technology corridor in Utah. So I think there are ways to do that based on the type of people that you're going after. I co-founded the Women Technology Council earlier this last year, and we did the same thing, right? We're trying to create ways i.e. we're doing them through podcast and video cast to create content and then spread that through that community to draw people in for what we're doing. And just by doing things like that, we started our initial event in October with 120 women. And then in December, we did a charity event. We raised over $1,000 for the women's shelter. And it all comes through word of mouth reach of creating a conversation about what we're doing, reaching out to those constituents, providing content, and involving people in a fashion where they feel inclusive. So I know those are just a couple of examples because I do think it works. You just have to understand that's your market and then figure out how to create something on a low-cost medium and get it out to them.
Very good. Kel, there's a lot more questions out there, and I noticed that nobody's left yet, which is a good sign for this panel. We appreciate them taking their time to be with us today, and we'd like to give them a round of applause. And perhaps they'll be able to stay around for just a few minutes for individual questions you might have. If you'd like to come up and visit with them. And we appreciate you coming today. Shauna, would you like to say a word?
Yeah, I would like to say a word. Wow, that was great. Thank you so much. That was terrific. We do have a podcast that will be available on the UBDF.net website.